Hey, for those who are online, make sure you pour yourself a bowl of Captain Crunch and a cup of coffee. And if you have a Bible, turn to Philippians 1. If you have one here, turn to Philippians 1 or go to Philippians 1 on your device or whatever. But we're in this series called Best Summer Ever. And it's kind of an ironic thing because it doesn't feel like the best summer ever. It feels kind of like the worst because things don't seem to be going well. There's a lot of challenges and a lot of questions. And for Paul, the Apostle Paul, he wrote a letter to his friends in Philippi, the Philippians, and it was really a thank you note because they had invested in him to go out and help people know Jesus and start churches. And as Paul is doing that, he ends up arrested in quarantine, house arrest, locked down. His dream, his goal in life was to go to Rome, the center of the world, as a preacher, and instead he went as a prisoner locked up. And it didn't feel like his life was thriving. Yet when you read Philippians, there's over 19 references to joy or rejoice, even though he probably had a lot of reasons why he didn't have to. It wasn't easy to do that. And Philippians was written to them, the Philippians, but it was written for us. There are truths in there that will help us look at our lives differently, the same way Paul did, to have a different perspective, to understand how joy can be possible when life argues that it shouldn't. And we talked about Philippians 1:6 a couple of weeks ago, that Paul was confident of this, that he, God, who began a good work in them, the Philippians, and in you and in me, that if God started something, he will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus, until God says time's up. And Paul knew that he could trust God to finish what he started. And he wanted them to know that, and he wants us to know that. That he was confident, and he had this confidence. And like I said, he's writing from a Roman prison under house arrest and is awaiting a verdict of a trial that could mean execution. And if you read Acts 28, he's locked up for 2 years. So it's been multiple weeks, right, where we've lived in this new reality of things kind of being different in our world because of a virus. He was locked up for 2 years. And he was chained to a Roman soldier 24 hours a day. And like I said, he dreamed of going to Rome as a preacher, and he was went as a prisoner. And he's in the middle of this trial, waiting the outcome, the verdict of what will happen to his life. And he writes this letter filled with comments about joy and peace, not worrying, being free from anxiety, to the Philippian church. He saw things different. Do you have anything in your life right now that you wish was different? Anything in the world you wish was different? Anything kind of in your life you wish was different? Probably wouldn't be hard to come up with a list. It'd be hard to make it a short list. But there's something about us in our lives. There's always something we wish was different. When we're younger, we wish we were older. And then when you get older, you wish you were younger. When you're younger, it's a punishment to take a nap. You know, like something changes, but we always wish something was different about our life. When you have a job, you wish you had a different job. If you don't have a job, you wish you had a job. If you have a house, sometimes you wish you had a different house. And there's always things we want better about our relationships or our families, about our situations. There's always things in life that are challenging and we want them to be different. And the thing is, all of us have something we wish was different. We all have this what in our life that we don't understand the why. Like, why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to us? Why is this going on? And one of the things we've talked about a lot over the last year in a couple different series is I promise you, the Bible promises us that God always has a why, a purpose behind the what. Or he can take some of the worst what's happening to us, some of the things we wish that were different, and he says, I can bring purpose out of that. God always has a why behind a what. And one of the toughest things that we need to understand, that we wrestle with, that we need to get to a point of doing, that Paul challenges us to do, is the fact that I don't have to understand the why, to trust God with the what. I don't always have to know the why. Why is God doing this? But there's always opportunity for me to trust God with what's happening to me. And several years ago, I heard Craig Rochelle talk about two questions that are good to ask when you don't know what to do when something's different. When something hits you and it makes you think, man, this is not good. Two questions to help you think differently that actually the Apostle Paul talks about. And in Philippians 1, verse 12, he's writing to them, the Philippians, and he says, I want you, the Philippians, to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me, what had happened to him? He's thrown in jail. He's there for a long time. He was the one apostle that was actually the go apostle. Like, he was going everywhere. Now he can't go anywhere. And he's been through it. It's been pretty rough. And I think that they were worried about him. And he says, no, I want you to know what's happened to me. Even though I bet he was tempted to wish it was different, he said it has actually served to advance the gospel. He says, look, something has happened to me. My what is I'm arrested. I'm locked down. I've been put through some pretty bad stuff. But I want you to know that what has happened has actually served to advance the gospel. And one of the things that Paul asked, his what, he says, now I want you to know, and what, now what, that's a good question to ask. Now what? We actually spent a whole series talking about that. It was a series called Now What? What do you do when you don't know what to do? The whole point of that series was talking about how do we figure out what our next step is? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And you can ask that question, now what, in frustration. Great, now what? A new news bulletin, new restrictions, new challenges, different things come up in our life. Now what? You can ask it that way, or you can ask it like we asked in our last series, now what? What do you do when you don't know what to do? Like, what do I do? But what if you ask this question differently? God, now what? What are you doing here that you want me to be part of? See, Paul's prayer request, hey, you know, what's happened to me is actually served to advance me out of prison. I had a get out of jail free card. I'm free. Like, he wasn't praying for his release. He was praying, God, would you advance the gospel? Would you help others know and follow Jesus because of me? He had this different perspective. So again, think about, what was it you wish that was different in your life? What are some things that have happened to you? What is your what? And what Paul knew is what happens to us, all of it, the good and the bad and everything in between, can actually serve a purpose, God's purpose, not just in us, but through us to move the gospel forward. That word advance, it was a military term. And it was the first people who went in to kind of pave the way for the battle. Like, they were advancing the mission forward, the goal forward. And when you understand that God can use anything to move forward what he's doing, you might be tempted to look at it and go, right now, oh, this is bad. This is not good. Like Paul's situation, they're looking at Paul thinking, we're having to write to him in prison. This is bad. Nothing good can come from what's happened to him. And Paul says, no, I want you to stop and think for a minute. Change your perspective. What if the obstacles that are in our life right now could actually be opportunities for God to do something? What if these setbacks are actually setups for what God is going to do next? God, now what? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to trust you? How do you want me to take a next step to be part of what you're doing? What Paul knew is there was purpose in his prison. And the truth is, if you feel trapped or stuck in some areas of life right now, there's purpose in yours too. But it requires this next step of trust. You just have to, if you were just casually looking at Paul's life, you would think what has happened to him is bad. But the closer you look, the more you see God was right in the middle of that. And I promise you, whatever you wish was different in your life, whatever's challenging in your life, God's right in the middle of that, and he's a God of purpose. Sometimes you just have to look really, really hard. One thing I like to do is I like to go out at night and see the stars and look at those. Not the Dallas Stars, the hockey team. I like to watch them too. God rest their season. But I was out looking at the stars, like the actual stars, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I see this one star kind of moving, like about like a pace like that. And I was like, huh, it must be like a satellite, or maybe it's the International Space Station. And then all of a sudden, right behind it, about like in the sky, if I went like that, like the hang loose sign, if I did that, it was about that far apart in the sky. There's another one on the same line going. It's like, what in the world? And then there was a third, and then there was a fourth, and then there was a fifth. And I'm a conspiracy theorist at heart. And so I'm going, what is this? So I called Jennifer, my wife, out. I said, Jennifer, do you see this too? Like, what is this? And so she goes, well, I wish there was a way we could look this up and figure out what's going on. And she Googles it, and Google tells her, and she tells me, although I'm still not sure I fully buy into this, that Elon Musk has launched hundreds of satellites into space, and it's this thing called Starlink, and they were a satellite train. And that night, I counted 12. Later that week, I counted 24 satellites in a row. And what was even funnier is, this will be lost on some of you, but after I'm hearing this, and I'm hearing what's going on, and I have huge admiration for what Elon Musk is innovating and creating, but I kind of go, he kind of sounds like a Bond villain. Like he's launching satellites into space, and what's going on? Like James Bond. And so I go inside, and I turn on TV, and there's a Bond movie on. And it's Moonraker. And in Moonraker, there is this Bond villain who's launching satellites into space. And I'm going, what's happening? So every night I would go out and I'd want to look for these Starlink satellites. And you don't see them easily. Like I actually have an app that tells me kind of when they're coming and where to look. But you actually have to look really hard. And, you know, I'm kind of looking around and any movement of my eye, I'm going, did that move? Did that move? And then once you see it, it's there. It's almost, you can't miss it once you find it. And if you want to see that God has purpose, that there's a why behind the what in your life, you're going to have to look. Maybe even with eyes of faith. You might have to look close to see where God's right there. He's always there. But he may not tell you the why. You may have to look through eyes of faith to say, even as difficult, challenging, and as bad as this seems, what is happening to me could actually serve God's purpose to advance something. And when you look for that, you tend to ask the question, God, as difficult as this is, I'm going to trust you with the what. And what do you want me to do now? What? What do you want me to do to participate in what you're doing in me and through me right here? Now what? What is it you want me to do? Paul said this, he kind of explains this a little bit more in verse 13. He says this, as a result of what? Of him being in a bad situation. It has become clear, he's locked up, chained to guards. It has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. Paul's locked up, he's chained to a guard 24 hours a day. And he says, look, Philippians, you think I'm locked down. You think I'm held back. You think I'm chained down and I can't preach. I want you to think differently. Think who I'm chained to. Every 6 hours, 4 times a day, a new guard would come and be locked in with Paul. Paul wanted to go as a preacher, but he went as a prisoner, but he becomes a preacher as a prisoner. And for 6 hours, this guy is sitting there going, please make him stop. I get it. I get it, Paul. He goes, no, you don't. And I'm going to keep talking until you do. And he goes, look, my shift's up. He goes, oh, great. Bring in the next guy. He goes, you think I'm chained and held back. But I'm chained to the imperial guard, the palace guard, these people of huge influence. And they think I'm the captive. I have a captive audience. Who's the real prisoner here? And for Paul, what he knew is the test you endure can sometimes become the testimony you tell. Like, it becomes the story of, like, you'll never believe what God did. out of something that I thought was really, really bad. Paul could say, I can trust you with the why. So now what? I'm chained up. I'm not going to just sit here and pout. I'm going to talk to the guy, the audience, whatever audience is in front of me. God, now what? What does it look like to trust you here? Then he says this in verse 14. And because of my chains. So again, you think I'm chained and held back. No, no, no. Because of them, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord. And they dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. Look, there's something about what's happening in you is it's not just about you. What you're going through, what you're going through, what's challenging for you, when you trust God with the why and you ask him about what the what, God, now what? What do you want me to do to be part of what you're doing here? You suddenly take your eyes off your own paper and realize maybe something that's going on in me is really about someone around me or someone that I'm going to meet someday. You may be going through a financial setback, and it's really, really hard. And you say, God, now what? Not now what? How do I get out of this financial mess? But now what? How do you want to use this in my life and the life of those around me? You may be in a relational dead end where it feels like you're stuck. The relationship's not there, or it's not where you want it to be, or something's challenging. And you say, instead of saying, God, how do I fix this? You say, God, that's important. But also, now what? How do you want to use this in my life to maybe help better relate to somebody or have a story that will encourage somebody someday? If you're in a job that it feels like you're stuck and it's a dead end, you might say, God, now what? Maybe there's somebody here you have me here for. It may feel like a prison and you may be in chains, but maybe that job is really about someone who's working with you or in your class, someone who's sitting with you on your team, or someone who plays with you. And really, God has you there to do something for them because others become confident in the Lord because of what you're going through. Now what? And you can ask it out of frustration. Now what? You can ask it out of selfishness. How do I get out of this? Or you can ask that to be part of what God's doing. God, now what? What do you want me to do to be part of what you're doing? God can impact others through you. And this isn't just for the Apostle Paul's of the world. Because he said others have become more confident. And they dare to proclaim the gospel. Verse 15, it says this. It is true. See, Paul had this problem. Everywhere he went, somebody came after and said, that's not true. Don't listen to him. And Paul would have to write to them or he'd have to go back to them to try and help people understand, no, this is what it means to follow Jesus. And he had all kinds of people who wanted to make things miserable for him. And some of them, he said this, he goes, it is true that some are preaching Christ out of envy and rivalry. They don't like Paul. But others out of goodwill, they have good purpose. The latter do so out of love. The people who do it out of goodwill do so out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. See, some people said, are you really going to believe the teachings of a guy who's in prison? He's an enemy of Rome. How can we trust him? The former, those people, do so out of selfish ambition. It was about them, not about God. Not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. People, he's locked up and they're out free just to slander and make life difficult and confusing for others in terms of what Paul done trying to move the gospel forward. And then listen to his response. That's all true, but he said, listen to this. Verse 18. What does it matter? But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoiced. He's at the end of the day, he says, what does it matter? What matters is that Christ is preached. But for many times, I bet Paul felt like, this kind of matters. I'm being slandered. It matters because they're making it, I help set people up to follow Jesus and they feel like they're tearing stuff down. Paul asked this question, so what? What does it matter? Does this really matter? What matters to me is if Christ is being preached, I don't care who gets the credit. I don't care if it means I'm in prison. I don't care. What does it matter? So what? It's a Greek word. What does it matter? Tisgarplein. It just means, so what? Like 100 years from now, will this matter? 10 years from now, will this matter? 1 year from now, will this matter? The problem is we live so much in the moment when then something happens, it affects us and we think, oh no, everything's ruined. But if we could fast forward our lives, we quickly realize there are some things that really matter and some things that simply don't. And sometimes I'm confused about which is which. Does this really matter? And kind of the key here is when you realize, when you recognize what doesn't matter, you can focus on what does. Paul had this ability to sort out what matters and what doesn't. And his big filter was, as long as Christ is preached, that matters. If it means I go to prison, I'm okay with that. He could sort out what matters and what doesn't matter. If you've ever had to clean out an office or clean out a closet, clean out your garage, it's not as easy for some of us as it is for others. Some of us are just ruthless. Oh, look, it's my baby picture. Trash it. I don't care. I just want a clean house. For others, it's like, oh, but this receipt from 1984 from Blockbuster. What if another Blockbuster, I think actually there's still one Blockbuster video store open, if I remember right. What if I could go back and I need this receipt to get a refund? Or what if, you know, like we hold on to some weird things. Sometimes it's hard to sort out what matters and what doesn't. Paul's filter was eternity. His filter was Jesus. What matters is that people know him. And I wonder if sometimes God's purpose being lived out in me gets pushed to the side because I'm more concerned about what happens to me, not what happens to others and them knowing and following Jesus. The truth is, I don't have to understand the why to trust God with the what, because he's promised there is one. So Paul says, so what does it matter? What does it matter? People matter. Christ is preached, and people know Jesus. People are the thing that matter. Go to verse 21. Paul said it this way. He goes, here's my filter. Here's how I sort this out. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I'm alive, I want people to know Jesus. If I die, I get to be with Jesus. That's what matters, period. If I'm to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. I will keep doing everything I can do to help people know and follow Jesus. Yet what shall I choose? Because he was in a pretty miserable spot. You ever felt that way? I kind of wish I could just kind of be with Jesus and this whole thing could be over, and heaven for sure sounds a lot better than here. And Paul says, I don't know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. The continual promise of the Bible is that what God has prepared for us is better than what we've done with this world. But he said this, it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. I exist to serve you and help you know and follow Jesus. And that was his mindset. And because he knew that nothing stops God from working, he could say, for me to live is Christ and die is gain. And I'm going to keep on trying to be fruitful in what I'm doing to help you know and follow Jesus. But he knew, if I go, nothing stops God from working. If I'm in prison, nothing stops God from working. He knew that. And that's why it says this in verse 25. Convinced of this, that nothing stops God from working. I know that I will remain. I'm still here. So if I'm not dead, God's not done with me. And I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith. Paul was convinced that nothing stops God from working. So his mindset was, I'm going to be part of that. I'm going to make my life, yeah, I'm going to try and talk to God about my financial challenges, my relational challenges, my problems with job or school or friends or whatever I'm getting, my health. I want to talk to him about all of that. But I want to talk to him and ask God, now what? How do we be part of what you're doing? Because that's unstoppable. Nothing holds that back. And it changes my mindset that when something happens to me, I actually think, hey, God, can you use this for your good purpose? Paul existed to live for Christ and to help others progress, have progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, with you again, your boasting in Christ Jesus will abound on account of me. He said, I want you to know Jesus more because of me. Is there anybody in your life where you're saying, God, I want them to know Jesus more because of me? Is there a group of people in your life where you're saying, God, I want them to know Jesus more, to know you more because of me? Paul was convinced that nothing stops God from working. So he joined him. He followed him. He joined him what he was doing because he knew it was unstoppable. And Paul recognized, he goes, yeah, it's true, I'm locked down, but God isn't. And even here, I'm talking to guards who have huge influence in the palace of Caesar. And others are impacted through what I'm doing. Paul was convinced that nothing stops God from working, so he never stopped trusting, following, participating, and saying, God, use me in their life, even when it's hard. And what's challenging for us is some of us are dealing with so much, such challenging what's, that we don't know the why. And it makes it hard to trust. God, why would you allow this? Or God, how can you use this? Or God, it's zapped the life out of me. I am weak and I am tired. But when you understand and believe that God says there's a purpose, and he can bring purpose from anything and everything, that nothing is wasted. Jesus told his disciples this way. He tried to encourage them this way because they just didn't understand a lot of stuff. So he said this: you do not need to realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand. It may be much later, but one day you're going to understand. And the thing to understand about that, he's saying, is I promise there's a why. I'm doing something. And it requires you to have trust and faith to step into it when you don't understand the why. Our focus is on now what? God, now what? What do you want me to do to be part of what you're doing? And say, so what? What does it matter? Will this matter in eternity? Will it matter next week? Will it matter next year? And Paul had this sense that I don't have to trust God with the why, to trust God with the what. And I don't know what it is you're going through right now or what you wish was different. But I want to challenge you to look at it differently and think that God may take something that looked like a prison that had Paul locked down. There may be something that feels like it's got you stuck. But God says, no, I'm about to set you free to do something that'll be impactful on others. But it requires you saying, my life exists to serve God and others. And my prison could be a platform that God uses to impact others. Let's pray together. God, thanks that you actually put Paul through the ringer. Thanks that he went through struggles and he was honest about it, even honest that he struggled with it. But we get to see him navigate these things, to challenge us to think differently, the fact that there can be joy in the midst of pain, that there's purpose even in the midst of a lot of questions and uncertainty. God, I pray that we would always be asking, now what? How do I trust you and take a next step of following you and partnering with you, because you're unstoppable. And God, I pray that you would step into our world and make a difference and do that through us. Use us to be part of what you're doing. And God, help us to sort out what matters and what doesn't. Say, so what? To help us have focus. Focus is our friend when we can focus on what matters. And God, I pray that you would help keep reminding us that people matter. Help us to stay focused on that. And God, I pray you'd use us this week to be part of what you're doing. Give us the courage to step into what you're doing, because what you do is unstoppable. And we don't want to miss it. We want to be part of it. And some of us might be brave enough to say we want to be part of it even when it's hard. Thanks that Paul made that choice. And he challenged the Philippians, and we get to read their mail and see how we could think about life differently too. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Hey, next week we're going to be online only for July 4th weekend. So July 5th, online only. The next week, the plan is to be back in person. We'll be honest, we plan in two-week increments right now. And we use pencil and dry erase. So make sure you stay tuned. Please RSVP if you're going to be here on the 12th. As things develop and as we make choice to open up some more or pull back some, we just ask for patience. We are being very prayerful and trying to be prudent and wise through this. It's not easy to navigate, but you guys are so great to lead because we have such great community here at Live Oak. So thank you so much.